All right, you're live on the Arms Room Show with Glenn
and John.
And we were just talking about like really horrible,
like random things that you say that you can't unsay.
You can't unsay. Like if you're about to, like when you get coffee, like getting coffee, right? This morning it's like you're getting coffee and they're like, "Hey, enjoy your coffee." And you're like, "Yeah, you too." And you're like, "Oh, shit, I wasn't actually listening to what you said, right. And then I pre-programmed response to you, and now I just look stupid."
Like your waiter or your waitress, "Oh, here, enjoy your dinner." "Oh, yeah, you enjoy yours too.
Oh. Fuck. Or my, so the take luck thing actually comes from Brian Regan. You guys ever listen to Brian Regan's comedy? He's a little over the top. He's a very animated guy, but I like his comedy. It's pretty good stuff. And he talks about this whole take luck thing. We try to say take care, but also good luck.
Yeah, yeah.
So you say, "Take luck." Ah, shit. Forget it. Just high five and call it a fucking day.
Yeah, done. I'm leaving.
I'm out.
What are you going
to
do?
Thanks, guys. Thanks for playing.
All right, we're coming to you from the AR500 Armor Studio. Wonderful Arizona Statehood Day we celebrated this weekend. I almost pulled my... We're good. All right. Statehood Day we celebrated this last weekend. Phenomenal. I don't believe in Valentine's Day. I think it's stupid.
Valentine's?
Whatever the fuck it's called. Who cares? I don't believe in it.
It's a fake holiday made by...
Just like I don't believe in Santa. Who cares how you say it? It's not fucking real.
Finish your coffee. All
right.
Jesus.
So, Valentine's Day is stupid, all right?
Yes.
It's just an over-commercialized holiday like so many other freaking holidays. Yeah.
It's a fake holiday, period.
I'm not really into most holidays anyway because most holidays are invented for no other reason than to fleece people out of their money. Now, there's some legitimate holidays, of course. It's President's Day, for example.
Yeah.
Kind of a big deal.
July 4th is like Christmas.
July 4th is the holiday. In my opinion, July 4th is the only real holiday.
That's my favorite holiday.
All right. But outside of that.
Memorial Day.
Okay, Memorial Day is a good holiday. Veterans Day is a good holiday. But now look at, but here's why. Here's why. Okay, now I'm like you. I'm like, all right. But here's the thing. Memorial Day is more important than Veterans Day. But on both of those holidays, what does everybody do? They found a way to over-commercialize it. We're going to have a Memorial Day sale. Yeah, because that's how I like to memorialize my dead friends. Getting your shit at 20% off.
And it's always mattresses and cars for some reason. No shit.
Same thing for President's
Memorial Day. Memorial Day.
Super mattress sale.
Get a new car. You're like, it's not really what I'm thinking about Memorial Day, but I appreciate the offer. I mean, yeah. I'm also not the person who hates on people. Like, you think Memorial Day is all about barbecues and beer? Absolutely, I do, because my dead
friends can't do that
guys
anymore.
Would want me to have barbecues and beers because that's what they wish they were doing.
You know how I know? Because when I was active, that's all my life.
That's all we did was barbecues and beer.
Yep.
Yeah, whatever. But back to Valentine's Day. Yeah. Or Valentine's Day. However you say it. However you want to say it.
Valentine's.
You can say it however you want because it's not a real holiday. So we celebrate Statehood Day because it's Arizona's birthday.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful state we live in. Drew and I went camping. We went to the Titan Missile Museum. That was awesome. If you've never driven out to beautiful Green Valley, Arizona, to go to the Titan Missile Museum, you are missing out on a cool trip. It's a short tour, totally worth it. And then if you have the time, head north into Tucson and go to the Pima Air and Space Museum. You could knock them both out in one day. It'd be a tight day, but you could do it. You could spend 2 days at Pima Air and Space. Mm. That's no shit. You could spend 2 days there and still probably not see everything. That is an amazing freaking museum.
That's wild.
But we had a great time at Titan Missile Museum. We had a great time camping, enjoyed the beautiful weather, enjoyed the beautiful mountains, enjoyed Statehood Day. Happy birthday, Arizona.
Happy birthday, America. Yeah. I mean, Arizona.
Too many Christmas, guy. Get your freaking holidays right.
Where's your coffee this morning?
All right. So thank you, patrons. Don't forget the extra shows that we do for you guys. Specifically, James and I talk about personal stuff. Before James, it was Ryan and I talking about stuff. Before Ryan, it was Dave and I talking about personal stuff. Like, we talk about good things on these extra shows, so you should definitely look into them. And make sure you're getting the other stuff, the blogs, the show reviews, the other things that James is putting up there. And don't forget to send us your show ideas. Look, today's show is another Patreon-requested show. Most of our shows are Patreon-requested, so you should probably get on that horse. If you send us a show idea, so few people send us show ideas, honestly, that most of the time if someone sends us a show idea, we go with it, unless it's something we just did.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're like, yeah, shit, we'll talk about that. We don't care. Anyway, something to think about. Sad news. We didn't do a live show last week because of some things we were involved in. And so we didn't get a chance to talk about the 2-7 Special Forces group guys who were killed. Sergeant First Class Javier Gutierrez and Sergeant First Class Antonio Rodriguez, both killed in an insider attack in
green on blue, blue on green.
Shithead fucking Afghanistan place. Yeah, in Kabul. So, yeah. Sucks. Peace talks happening right now in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Hoping that that continues.
We will see.
It would be great if we could get out of there before 2 decades rolls around. Pretty awesome.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen. But it would be great.
I can dream about it, right?
Yeah. We could start now and we still wouldn't be out.
I know. It takes a long time
to get September out.
But does it?
It does.
I mean, does it?
I've seen some cop retrogrades, and they pretty much, you know, they pull out pretty quickly.
Yeah, they can. It depends on how you do it.
I'm saying it can be done.
If we really put our minds to it.
I'm saying if you just want to leave a place, what you do is you leave.
Yeah, because that's pretty much what a retrograde is. Yeah. You just grab all your ammo and food and leave.
Yep.
Yeah. But then you leave all that infrastructure behind.
Bip that shit, kid! All of it. Craters everywhere.
Some of it you can't.
But do you?
Well, you could.
No, we can bip anything we want.
Have you seen like photos of the ones that we leave behind? Like Fob Shank was like retrograded.
Mm-mm.
It looks like a ghost town. The Afghanis did not keep up with it. It's just destroyed.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so you don't really have to worry about the infrastructure because it's just going to go to shit anyway.
They ripped all the copper wire out of the wall. That they did for sure. All right, rally on Saturday here. I did not attend.
I did not attend
because I already had a pre-existing engagement and
yeah.
and plans and everything. But to everyone who went, awesome.
Good job.
A lot of our students went. A lot of our listeners were there. We had a lot of big group photos. A lot of cool stuff. Glad no one. You know, here's the thing about our side doing rally. I have attended many, many rallies over the years for everything from Veterans Affairs to gun rights to public land access to game and fish stuff, everything. And here's what I'll say. One nice thing about the way we do stuff is we don't leave giant piles of trash. We don't assault anyone. We don't hate on the cops. We don't torch anything. We don't light anything on fire. We go down. We respectfully get together. Everyone down there mostly looked like they had guns and armor. Of course, my buddy Mark took his freaking Humvee with a gun mounted in the goddamn turret and all this kind of stuff. All those things are happening. And what actually happened? Nothing. We didn't do anything negative, right? When the people who are against these guns show up and they have rallies, they trash the place. They leave their garbage behind. These are the people, of course, who are so into the environment. But they leave their garbage behind. They freaking trash it. They assault people. They spit on people. They spit on cops. They throw stuff. They light things on fire. So I'm just glad, as usual, as per my expectations, that nothing terrible happened.
Yeah.
And thanks to those who went down there. I'll be at the next one. There will be a next one.
Of course there will.
So this bill's not going anywhere. Yeah. Right? It's not going to pass. But it's also going to come around again.
They've already said this thing is dead on arrival.
And the important part is to make sure that we keep track of all the people who supported it and remember not to reelect them.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not the kind of state we want for our children.
Nope.
Yeah. I had a great alumni event last week.
That was a good time.
We had, I don't know, 30 people here or so, alumni, like throughout the night. Several of our instructors, everyone talking about their armor, kits, setups. We spent about 30 minutes just kind of hanging out, general open forum. Then we spent about 45 minutes or so talking to people about kits. Chris went over his, you went over yours, I went over mine, Ted went over his. had a couple, the AR-500 armor guys kind of went over their stuff. Mason went over his stuff. Mason taught everyone a lot about armor. I kind of started talking about armor, and it took me like 30 seconds to realize Mason actually knows way more about how to test threat levels and everything than I did. So I just freaking let him go with it. And it was great, man. It was a great event. Everyone had a good time. We had some drinks and snacks. Everyone got like a 30% discount on everything they bought. So a lot of alumni took that opportunity to snatch a bunch of stuff up. We gave away a ton of shit. Yeah. We gave away a full armor setup, the Testudo with armor. We gave away a full set of armor. We gave away a backpack panel, and we gave away a fully stocked IFAC. Yep. I mean, we gave away a ton of stuff. Everyone got a free, you know, raffle ticket, tons of information, lots of great times getting everybody together and having your alumni meet each other. So thank you to all of our alumni who are listening, who came to the event. Look for more events like that continuing to come up. And we always post this stuff in the alumni Facebook group. All right. So if you're not in the alumni Facebook group and you are a graduate of one of our programs, any of our programs, even a free Stop the Bleed class makes you an alumni of Independence Training. So whatever level of alumni you are, if you've completed one of our programs, even one of our corporate programs, you're still an Independence Training alumni. Make sure that you jump on the Facebook page. And if you don't have a Facebook account, get one. Literally get one. Use a fake name or whatever. I don't care. Don't post anything on it if you don't want to. Yep. But at least get the account so you can stay up to date with our alumni group. Because it also has all of our discount codes listed for all the different companies that we work with. It's got alumni events. It's our alumni in there posting constantly great information, cool articles, sharing information with each other, some really great stuff that's going on in there. So if you're missing out on it, you really are missing out. Mm-hmm. Last thing I want to talk about was we got a bunch of great courses coming up. So anyone who's interested in independence training stuff, we have our close contact handgun class coming up almost full. We have a weekday IFAC lifesaver class on March 5th. Very, very uncommon for us to teach it on a weekday, but we've got a couple of students who specifically requested it, so we're kind of doing the class for them and opening it up to everybody. And then we've got a normal weekend IFAC in March as well. We've got our intro to communications class coming up, which has been very, very popular with Ted, followed then by our entangle handgun class. We have more classes coming up very soon, going to be posted in March all the way through July or maybe even August. A lot of them down in Casa Grande, some of them up at Ben Avery. But look for all the stuff that's coming up, guys. I mean, it's a great time to get out there and train. The weather's still nice. Arizona is beautiful. And even when the weather gets hot, don't be afraid to come out and train. You know, we make sure that everyone is safe. We take more breaks than normal. And you're going to learn a lot about yourself when you're coming out and training in the heat.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Redwire gear moment, go.
Read more, talk less. Something I used to do a lot. I used to read a lot. The last couple of years, I have not been reading as much. I'm going to try to get that going back up again here pretty quick. But read more. Read about everything. Fiction, nonfiction, history, whatever. Doesn't matter. Just read. Pick up a book and read. And talk less about it. Talk less about bullshit. Spend more time reading and learning. And it doesn't have to be... You know, it doesn't always have to be some type of memoirs or something for you to learn something. You know, just expanding the mind, reading whatever it is you read. Even if it's comic books, I don't give a shit. Read more. That's right. What I got this week.
Red Wire moment brought to you by RedWireGear.com. I want to talk about a piece of gear real quick that I just started using. James actually started using it as well. Everybody knows our AFAX. That's this. No one who's listened to the show or who follows us on Independence Training.
Oh, that's a new one. Your other one finally died on you.
No.
No?
I was willing to still let that one with holes in it continue to serve me well, as it has for years.
Yeah.
This is the new stretchy AFAC. Now, it's going to be, I think Riker is officially announcing at the end of this week, I believe. But they told me that I could go ahead and talk about it. That kit, when I first put it on, okay, I trained my other kit for like 4 years, all right? This kit, when I first put it on, was more comfortable than the other kit I had, even after wearing it all that time. I was telling James about it, and he was like, dude, I've been wearing mine for like 4 months and can't quite get it to fit me perfectly. And that's something a lot of our students will say, like, I can't quite get it perfect. Like, and I'm like, dude, I wear mine everywhere, hunting, hiking, competition, everything. Like, I've sweated a lot in this thing to break down that fabric and make it work. And then freaking Riker drops this on us. Literally more comfortable than my other one when I first put it on. Gave it to James. We went on a big hike yesterday during the hunting thing that we're going to talk about today. Lots of hiking yesterday. Comfortable.
Yeah.
So price-wise, they're going to be almost twice as expensive. So initially, I think people are going to be like, oof, that's a lot. The comfort level, holy crap. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Freaking comfortable. So if you haven't yet bought an AFAC or you're looking to buy another one for whatever reason, get one of the new stretchy AFACs. I think MSRP, they're going to be like, I think Riker said around 90. I think normally they're about 50. Yeah, empty. That's about right, yeah. I'm telling you, worth every penny. Holy cow, comfortable.
Hmm.
Amazing. New colors are coming. Black right now is kind of the testing color, and then more colors will show up. But yeah, yes, amazing. So there you go. All right. Today's topic, getting started in hunting and talking about James's first hunting trip. So had an opportunity yesterday to go do some hunting. Drew went with us as well. James had never been hunting ever.
Correct.
So the basic
ever.
The basic information I give James is this. Think of it like a military op. It's going to be an ambush. All right? It's an ambush, counter-ambush situation. Now what we're going to do, get whatever camo you have, bring your AR, ready to roll. That's it. Bring whatever other shit you think you might need. And that's it. So the importance of that, before I let James roll with his points, the importance of that is this. You don't need a lot to get started.
No.
Right? James showed up in literally his old multicam BDUs. And I have had guys show up when I tell them, hey, dude, just go to Walmart and buy cheap camo pants, cheap camo shirt, some gloves and a face mask and a hat, whatever little stuff you might need. I mean, you're probably going to spend 50 or 60 bucks maybe on camo if you don't have any. Right? Cheap camo.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe.
If you run out and you get, you know, really nice stuff, obviously you're going to spend more. But it's like you don't need that. Just go out and get some cheap camo to get started. If you already have some BDUs laying around from your old stuff, use that, man. Use that. Don't care about camo patterns. You know, James can attest to this. I wore one type of camo pants, another camo freaking shirt, and a different camo hat. You know, yeah. I had multicam bottoms, whatever the hell Vortex is calling their pattern as a shirt, and then my We Plead the Second hat with freaking Woodland. Doesn't matter. The animals aren't like, whoa, those patterns don't match. That's not what they're looking for. They're looking for breaking up of the outline and a color match to the terrain. That's all they care about. And I posted up a photo on our Instagram story of James in multicam sitting up on a hillside that we were hunting and just gone. I mean, James is not a small guy and just disappeared. Hard to see him in the photo. And point is, whatever you got is probably fine. Gun-wise, whatever you have is probably fine. An AR with a red dot, an AR with an optic. I don't care if it's a freaking single shot.
New England firearms,
break
action shotgun.
It would totally work, man.
Yeah.
You know, just whatever gun you have that you're comfortable with what the zero is and what your point of impact is. I don't care what it is, it's that. Make sure it's of a sufficient enough caliber to take the animal down. The one thing I had to change with James, which is something I feel bears mentioning here, is ammunition. I want to make sure you're using the appropriate ammunition to kill an animal.
Yeah.
Not something that we would use for target practice or anything like that. So other than that, we changed that, but that was quick and easy. He uses 55 grain full metal jacket. I gave him some 55 grain freaking soft points. Point of aim, point of impact was basically spot on. We did the old very scientific method of shooting a rock. And at 25 yards, a rock that was about a fist-sized rock, and James smacked it, and so we're in business.
Yep, right? That's good.
Good enough to freaking accomplish what we need to accomplish. But other than that, it was just what he had, man. You know, so you don't need a lot of equipment. And that equipment, while we were out hunting predators, to go hunt deer, to go hunt elk, etc., basically the same. Like a good pack. You probably have a backpack.
Yep.
It might be camoed or it might just be tan. That's fine. You know, good footwear, good camo clothes. And you don't even need to be fully camoed to hunt big game. Predators a little bit different because they're going to be looking for you. But the point is to get involved in hunting, you don't need a lot. All right. So I'll kind of I'll let James take off from there. James, tell us a little bit about your experience.
Well, it started out great. The whole day was fun. We got to see a lot. I got to see a lot of different like terrain and hunting areas that I would have never been, like, just knowing from my experience, would have thought this is an area where you can hunt. You know what I mean? Because we were just a couple hundred yards off the highway for the most part, and you know, like I said yesterday, just driving through these highways, you don't know what's over that first hill, so you don't know what's beyond it. And it was kind of interesting to see like just the desert and everything that was out there.
And we were in canyons with waterfalls and all that, not far from the roadway where no one would ever pull over on the side of the road and hike back to.
Right, and it, I mean, we were in everything from hilled desert terrain that was just mostly grassy and cacti, and then we were in cedar brush, and then we were in rocks. I mean, it was different almost every hide we got into, so that was really fun. Interesting. I got 8 minutes in. I saw
very first stand.
Very first stand.
Early in the morning, eight minutes in.
Coyote came about 15 yards away from me, put him on my scope, missed him.
Bulletproof coyote.
Bulletproof coyote.
Hey, I did that with some fox on my first
John trip. Very first hunt. He was on bulletproof foxes.
Yeah, so sucked. I think I just had my holdover a little too high, and it just went right over him, so... that was a good learning experience for next time, so I'll be sure not to make the same mistake whenever I get one in my scope again.
Now, when the first time, because, I mean, when I explain it to you, and oftentimes when I explain to people, like, all right, man, it's going to be fast and it's going to be close. Dude. Like, we're not in, everyone thinks predator hunting and hunting in general is, like, big country where you're taking these long, drawn out, oh, let me get in position kind of shots, right? Which is often when I'm deer hunting, elk hunting, et cetera, usually... I won't even say that. Like 50% of the time, they're long and drawn out. 50% of the time, it's like snap shooting. You're like, you got to get on it fast, make a shot. but like with James's, hey man, it's going to be fast, it's going to be close. And he's like, yeah, I got you. How fast was it?
Oh, it was 1 second he was there, and the next second he's gone.
Close? 15 yards.
Super close.
Yeah. So was that exciting to see an animal like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it got my adrenaline up for a minute.
And know that he was there because of what we did.
Yeah, exactly.
We went to his house, and we called him in, and yeah, I think that's one of the more fun parts about it.
Yeah, it was definitely exciting to see him, like, because I saw him creeping up in the wash before he came so close to me. I just didn't have a shot until he came close to me. I tried to lead him a little bit through two cactuses, like right in between them, and then I took the shot, and, you know, he was gone, so it was... It was fun.
And now you can see the advantage of shotguns, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Definitely.
Because we had you, I had put you up on that hill thinking, well, you had a rifle, so I'm like, with a scope, so I'm thinking like, dude, put you up on this hill, like Overwatch, right? It's going to be perfect. And just that fucking coyote chose to leave that area right by you.
Yeah.
You know, which is fun. We can often predict where they're going to come from. You know, which we did, because I'm like, look, he's going to come down this wash or he's going to come over this wash. Like, there's only really two ways. He's, based on my experience, there's a 90% chance he's going to come one of these two ways. And he came that way. But then when he got spooked, for whatever reason he got spooked, he leaves fastest exit.
Yeah.
You know, which happened to be...
Right near me.
Right by you. So, yeah, that would have been... If you'd had a shotgun, I think that would have been a different story.
Oh, yeah.
So you bulletproof coyote. All right. You learned lesson mainly about
holdovers and leading him and just being aware of my surroundings, like watching. I didn't really see him come in too far away from me, but I saw him once he started coming up the wash really close to me. So it was just really a turn of luck that he got spooked and went right by me.
And it also gives you one thing I'm always reminded of when I'm hunting predators like that is it reminds me about some of the marksmanship fundamentals, the follow through. Because, man, I'm a pretty good shooter, and when I'm hunting these days, I don't really miss that much, but I still miss like everybody does. And when that happens, dude, if you're like, oh shit, like beating yourself up, it's the same in a competition or a friggin' firefight, it doesn't matter. Like if you're bummed about missing, you're probably going to keep missing. So it's like if you press the trigger and you don't get the desired result, it's like you just recheck your target, get back on your sights, and do it again.
Yeah.
You know, forget about what happened, just previously and get back on the horse and do it.
And
now,
if he had gone any other way but right up that hill that he went up, I would have taken a second shot.
Oh yeah, dude, he freaked
for
he was
sure.
Gone.
He
was gone.
I didn't beat myself up over it. It just pumped me up for the rest of the day to want to go get more, you know.
And then we get out and continue with the story. What happened next?
Well, we moved around and what did we hit? Like six hides throughout the day.
Yeah, I think so. Six.
And we saw lots of footprints. Lots of. Fecal matter from animals that we could recognize. I mean, you pointed them out mostly because I didn't know anything about it. But
yeah, but you're able to learn about what they look like.
Yeah, exactly.
And what kind of animals were in the area.
And like bobcat prints look like just bigger house cat prints, you know, and different hoofed animals and coyote prints.
Yeah, you got to see like cow prints. And sometimes people think like, James is like, dude, like what is this print? And like, well, that's a cow print.
Yeah.
And people think like, oh, James doesn't know what a cow print No, because he's not out there looking at fucking cow prints. So it's like for a lot of people,
really big, really
with
deep.
With all of the world experience that James has.
I
lived
on a dairy farm, so I know what cow footprints look like in mud, dirt.
Well, and you think it could be a cow, but what else might be out here that's got that? Because like we did find some elk scat, and some elk prints, which are much smaller than a cow, but similar,
but could be sort a calf. Of.
And yeah, I mean, if you didn't really know what you were looking for, it could be a calf, right? And so there's, what's the difference between a javelina and a deer? And a, like you said, a bobcat, like a giant bear house cat, right? No claws, basically a freaking cat print, you know? Bobcat shit looks basically like cat shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like...
weird.
But that's the idea, is like, how do you tell the difference when you're in an area? What is this scat? What made this print? You know, pointed out, we talked about some human footprints in one area we went to. There were some human footprints. It's like, are they coming? Are they going? You know... what are we looking for? Is a couple times we saw some. So that was, that's a big learning lesson.
Yeah.
But no more animals.
No more animals for the rest of the day. Yeah. That was unfortunate.
Despite my best efforts.
Yeah.
There was a couple times I was sure, man. I'm like, oh, this is such a good spot.
I felt like it too. Like just not even knowing anything. I thought, man, there's got to be something here, especially with all the traffic.
If I was a coyote, I'd be here.
Yeah, right. And then in that little canyon where we were up on the rocks, I was sure that we'd see a fox or something come over those hills. So,
we got one chance. Other than that, didn't see any other animals. A lot of people out yesterday too.
Yeah.
A lot of people, a lot of places we went in the interest of just trying to be kind of quick. We had not a compressed time frame. We didn't have all day. And so we're trying to hit some kind of close spots, and there was a couple places I wanted to go try because I hadn't tried them before, and a lot of people, everywhere, fucking everywhere.
You could hear so much shooting in the background, probably scaring away all the animals.
There was almost every place we went to, we could hear shooting in the background.
Yeah,
and we were never really that close to people.
You guys go up north or?
Yeah, up to 87.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like there was a lot of shooting. There was quad riding. There was a dude trail running.
Yeah.
A guy's off-roading. There was people. I mean, the weather's beautiful. And it's a beautiful part of the state. So it's not like I'm like, oh, those motherfuckers. Like, they have just as much right to use the land as we do.
Right.
But it's just there was a lot of people out on a weekend, which is actually one of the reasons I try not to go out on the weekends.
Yeah. I mean, it was a nice day. It was 70, 75 in there for a while. I could, you know, if I was riding quads, I would have gone out, you know. Even if I was a trail runner, which I'm not, that was a good day to run.
Yeah.
We just got a pretty funny message I have to share with John. Then pass it to James so he can see it.
What is it? James. Well, I got to figure out what's in my ears. I've got a scab.
One of our listeners, actually one of our own instructors, is freaking...
super funny.
Trying to remind John there's a camera on.
I don't give a shit. I'm going to sit here in my silkies at one point this summer and scratch myself.
My God. I have some American flag silkies. I'll do it with you.
This.
Yeah.
So that it's just precariously balanced on the inside.
No. So back to hunting.
Yeah, back to hunting.
So keep going then, James, with kind of your experiences about, what you had going on.
Well, I learned a lot about, not avoiding high trafficked areas or high hunted areas, but being mindful of them once you see, like, too many footprints in there. You know, we hear too many guys shooting around us, and, you know, we could just go somewhere else, go deeper into the desert maybe and find somewhere where those tracks start running out. If we had had more time, then I think that we probably would have done that a little bit.
Think short of that canyon we went to, where we got that coyote in, and think of how little traffic that place sees on foot.
Oh, yeah. There was, beyond the first 50 meters we were walking out, 50 yards we walked out, you know, you saw the standard people throwing beer bottles on the side of the road, people, you know, shooting aerosol cans or whatever, but after that, like, there was nothing. There was no footprints. There was no trash. There was nothing.
And that was one of the places we went the furthest back in, where all the other places, other than that canyon we crawled into, all the other places were relatively well trafficked.
Yeah.
You know? So that's always something to consider. If it's easy to get to, then people are easily going to go there.
Yeah,
right. The harder it is to get to, the less people you're going to find.
Yeah. And like you said, and even the predators are going to take an avenue of approach that benefits them. So if something's easy for them to get to, then it's easy for everybody else to get to. And it's probably they're going to avoid that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Their literal life depends on it. So, yeah. All right, keep going.
I learned about positioning into regards to wind, terrain, and sun. So with the sun, you always want to try and keep it at your back. From what I understand yesterday, we try to keep it at our back or being in the shade under a tree, next to a bush, something like that. So that was a good learning point for me because I would have never, known that. I would have just set up somewhere and been like, okay, the sun's right here. I'm next to a bush. I must be covered,
Well, and the thing about the sun is it's kind of obviously sitting in the sun now isn't too bad because it's like 65 degrees yesterday.
Yeah.
But 3 months from now, you're not gonna be anywhere near the sun.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
But there's another advantage to sitting in the shade, which is what?
Which is you're more concealed. Mm. Yeah. And that's what I was looking at it from, is a more concealed position. So...
And you think about anything shiny that you have on, and it may not even be intentional.
Yeah.
I mean, even like we were, a couple stands in, I was like, hey, man, take that. He had literally his service BDU top on, and he saw an IR American flag patch.
And I ripped all my other patches off and didn't even think about it.
I was like, hey, man, take that thing off because it's great
reflective
for...
Reflective in the daylight.
IR, but holy shit, is that thing reflective. Like, he was walking towards me, and it caught some glare, and I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
That patch is super reflective.
Yeah, so I put that in my pocket real quick.
And that's just little things. Like, you're sitting in the sun, and you're like, dude, I'm doing everything I should be doing. Why aren't the animals coming in? It's like, well, they're going to take a peek. They're going to look around. They look down there, and they see over on the side this glinty thing. That's out of place. Out of place stuff means they might not survive this encounter. That means forget it. We'll get the next one.
Yeah. So that was a good learning point, too, is just to keep yourself as flat or as matte colored as you possibly can.
Yeah.
No shiny stuff. Yeah, that was a good learning point for me. Terrain, like you took a picture of me on the hillside. I think I was, with the exception of my rifle, was pretty well blended in. And, I've had some people comment on that post that it were like circling areas in the post that was definitely not me, but it was like shaded areas that could have been my rifle or something. And I've had people say, are you there? Are you there? And it was, none of them got it right. So it was really nice.
Is that in the stories?
Yeah, it was in the story. And from that point, too, another thing you'll notice is you were below the skyline.
Yeah.
So if you had sat, again, most people are like, I'll just sit right here at the top of the skyline, not thinking that something's going to be down from them looking up at them.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning it's going to elevate your position. So you were far enough down the skyline that, you're well hidden in that photo.
Yeah.
Very well hidden.
It was pretty cool, actually, to see.
Yeah, multicam is amazing. And if you look at the photo more closely, for whoever looks at the photo and actually finds James, you'll see there's two things that stand out the most. That's his face, because it wasn't covered, and his rifle, because it's black.
Yeah.
Like, those are the two things that stand out the most. His body, totally hidden.
Yeah. And that was, like I said, I had some fun with some people who were trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah, multicam really is a good pattern. It really is.
Yeah, no, it's
the
great.
One thing that the Army did right.
For once.
MRE spoons and multicam pattern. Good 100%. Job, United States.
100%.
All right, keep going.
The third positioning was wind. We always had somebody upwind and, midwind, I would say. Somebody in the middle, somebody in an L shape, and then downwind. So it was just based off where we thought our avenues of approach were going to be coming from and all that in regards to wind. Same thing as like the sun, just angles and direction.
Yeah, you want to be able to see downwind instead of always keeping the wind in your face. So often people think, I want the wind in my face because I want to be able to, I don't want something smelling me.
Yeah.
So I want the wind in my face. Yeah, but the problem is now everything behind you smells you and you can't see behind you. So I want things to the left or the right to smell me so that I can see them.
Yeah.
And then if we have a good upwind, like there were several times that we'd put the shooter, you specifically, upwind, you know?
Yeah.
And so that stand setup is important too. You know, how we do that. It's like we have three shooters, basically, three people with guns, but I'm calling, so my primary job is making the sounds and setting up the stand and doing that. I'm more of like a tertiary shooter out of the three of us.
Yeah.
Drew had a red dot, so we put her closer to the call in case the animal snuck past you and was able to get close to the call. Now she's, you know, easily capable of making a 50-yard shot with, you know, her red dot, and then you with a better magnified optic as the primary shooter, so to speak, we put you over, you know, in a position where you're able to see more. That way we're not all three looking in the same direction. You know, I typically consider myself as a caller. I'm the back door gunner, you know what I mean? If someone's trying to sneak in the back door, trying to slyly get around us or something like that, I have the narrowest lane of a firing lane. You know, yeah. It's like, yeah, my space is this big. Just like that coyote, you know, we were done with the stand. Drew was so excited, you know, like, oh, did you see that coyote? That was awesome. And you're like, oh, man, it was so cool. I'm like, I have no fucking idea what happened. You know what I mean? Because I'm literally looking in the other direction. Like, I never saw it.
That morning we went hunting. Yeah. We did the first stand. That fox came in super fast.
Dude, that's like, the one that jumped up and grabbed the collar.
Yeah,
the tree,
jumped up and attacked the collar, and Glenn dumped four rounds of like a number four buck.
It was on the other side of the bush, and I was like, I have to kill this bush and this fox.
But then we go to, what was our second or third stand, and we were set up, and we get done with the stand, and we're walking back in the truck, and Glenn's like, why didn't you shoot? And I'm like, shoot it, what? He's like, dude, there were three coyotes down there playing with the collar.
Oh, that stand, yeah.
Because of the angle that I was at, there was a sentry plant. Like, basically, at the perfect, because we were kind of up on a hillside, and the collar was down below us, and there was, like, this sentry plant that was, like, in the perfect position that there were three coyotes behind this thing that
and
I could
faced
not see.
In the other direction, but I can just see him over
and
my shoulder.
And he's, like, looking.
So I'm like, is he going to shoot that shit or what? You know what I mean?
Like, you know, we get done, and he's like, why didn't you shoot him? I'm like, I didn't see him.
Yeah.
I didn't even hear him.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, he's like, they were there for like 5 minutes, fucking around with the collar. Sweet. If I'd have been 3 feet to the left, I might have seen him. Or to the right.
And that stand setup is important because that's a thing that a lot of people screw up when they're hunting in general, is ruining or limiting, I should say not ruining, but limiting their field of view, like what they can actually see. And you see that a lot with predator hunting specifically because a lot of time you're sitting on the ground, which is sometimes, like James saw yesterday a couple of times, I just stand up. Like, it's better to stand up against something, have some, you know, same protection. But then I can see over things. So it's like standing up, ladders, you know, things we talk about in our classes, sitting on a stool, sitting on a ladder, standing up. I mean, sometimes if it's like I sit down, now my eyes are basically the same level of the ground as a coyote's, which means I'm really limiting, you know, my view. And so it's something to consider as well with deer. You know, people will go in and hunt a deer stand and they'll sit down. Well, a deer is taller than you now, which means a deer can see what you can't see. Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting on the ground and the deer is coming in, you know, moving to the brush, it can see more than you can see potentially. So it's like really limiting your view and your fields of view and your lanes of fire. Like, dude, it's a huge mistake I see people make in hunting in general, predator hunting specifically, because of the way that we're typically, you know, setting up. But yeah, what else? What else? What are the lessons that you learned?
And the last one in regards to like positioning and the hide is keeping still, maintaining like the lowest amount of movement while you're sitting down or while you're, you know, whatever position you're in. You know, like you mentioned yesterday, don't scratch your nose, don't scratch your ass, just stay still. And I tried to do that as best as possible at every hide. You know, I don't think I moved at all when we were sitting in a hide, so.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was pretty.
I struggle with that the most because I'm like a
little fidgeter.
I'm a fidgety.
See, and I am
guy.
Too, but like sitting out there, it was like, I mean, the terrain was beautiful. The wind was calming.
Yeah.
I was just like listening to the calls.
It's super
chill. Scanning my area. Yeah, and I wasn't even thinking about moving. I was just thinking about where's this next predator going
to
come from.
And you're really only there. I mean, most of our stands were 12 minutes, 10 to 12 minutes, which this time of year is about what I'm doing. You know, a couple of them went out to 15 minutes because I really was hoping something was in the area and just I'd switch a call, switch a sound to try to maybe bring it in with something else. But, I mean, it's like, dude, I look at hunting like this. Hunting requires patience. Different types of hunting require different types of patience. Like, for example, I don't know if I could be a tree stand hunter. You know, like climb up in the top of a tree stand and sit there all day long. And I appreciate that there's some pretty well-made tree stands that are very comfortable and have little drink holders and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, I don't think I could just...
I mean, how long can I sit in one place?
Sit there.
Yeah.
For too long. You know what I mean?
If you get outside of that 10-minute range, you're really starting to push my boundaries of being able to sit still.
And just, yeah. And not, and now, you know, of course, the nice thing about tree stands, you're way up there. So you can move around a little bit, right? You can play on your phone or read a book. I mean, I know guys who climb up there and just read books until a deer shows up and they shoot it. That's not really my kind of hunting necessarily, yeah. But it exists and it has to exist based on some of the terrain that these guys have to hunt. So, and gals have to hunt. So I understand that. But it's like, there's different styles of hunting. There's some people who just get up on a hilltop, man, and they have a great overwatch of everything, and they just lay up there and glass and glass and glass and wait for something to come into their range, and then they either shoot it from there or they put a stock on it at that point. So there's all kinds of different styles of hunting. One of the things I love the most about predator hunting from that perspective is if you look at it as nothing other than just an exercise in patience, it's like, 10 to 15 minutes is as long as I have to sit here.
Yeah.
And you have to maybe let that ant crawl across your boot, whereas normally we would swat it. It's like, dude, he's just crawling across your boot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been sitting there in the desert and have a tarantula, and I'm also not afraid of tarantulas. I don't mind them at all. But, you know, and have tarantulas come cruising past me where I'm just watching this little tarantula. I mean, he's just doing his tarantula thing in the desert. He's not looking to fuck with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, if it was a snake, I would definitely get up and shoot some damn rattlesnake. But like,
facts.
Yeah, but like a tarantula, a little spider, an ant, you know, it's like, I'm just going to let them do their thing because I'm in their house and they're just doing their thing. And it's like, for me, that's a way to kind of connect back to nature. I'm enjoying the breeze. I mean, think, one of the things that James said was like, think about some of the absolutely beautiful terrain we saw yesterday.
Yeah.
Some of it was right alongside the road. How many people who drive that highway really have ever stopped and sat for 10 to 15 minutes like we did and just look at the terrain?
Yeah, it was gorgeous. That last hide we were in was like, it was gorgeous.
No, that was really pretty. Yeah, that was really pretty. And so it's like, that's a big part of, for me, of hunting is the experience of things. Now, when I go out hunting, I'm out there to fill my tag or kill the animal or whatever. Some people are like, well, bad day of hunting still beats a good day working, you know, or something like that. And it's like, yeah, but. You know, I am here to kill something. Yeah. This is why I came out here. If I just came out here to have a good time, I wouldn't be lugging this big fucking rifle around.
Yeah.
You know, so you're, I could just...
a cooler around instead.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. The backpack with a bunch of beer in it. Like, I'm not going to be hiking around this freaking rifle. But I'm out there to really enjoy myself and have a good time and hunt effectively, efficiently, kill an animal. I don't think that the success of a hunt is directly tied to killing an animal. Like, I would say yesterday, it was a successful hunt.
Oh, 100%.
We successfully called at least an animal in. You successfully got to put a scope on one. Kill it or not, you got to aim your gun at something and shoot at it.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a successful opportunity. We got to hunt. We got to hike. We got to have a good time. You know, it was, of course, you know, always fun to be... You know, with friends, always great to have Drew there and hanging out and learning more. And she's learning and you're learning and I'm learning still. We got to explore some cool new country. Just hanging out with good people and just hiking and having a good time. And no one's stressed out about anything, you know. We're not panicked. We had a little food, had some snacks. Everything was pretty kosher, you know. We got to just enjoy ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I think a big part of... Since the show is also kind of about getting started in hunting, and I want to hear more of your thoughts on kind of getting started in hunting as well, but is picking the people you're going to hunt with.
Yeah.
Like, do they have the same goals as you? Because I know people who, they're not satisfied unless they kill something. If they don't kill something, they have a bad day, and they're all pissy about it. You know what I mean? And they're usually, I might add this, those guys are usually the guys that don't kill shit. Like, yeah. They're usually the ones who don't normally really kill that much, and they're the ones who get the pissiest about not killing stuff. And it's like they're out there trying so hard that they're not having a good time or really seeing the signs of what they ought to be doing, I guess maybe is a way to say it. But to me, it's all about the people. Like, if we're like, hey, man, I want to take this little sidetracking. Hey, let's go check out this little mine. I want to go with hunting. I want to go hunting with people who want to do that.
Yeah.
You know? Or, hey, let's stop here and have a burger. Hey, let's go over here and do this. Or, hey, let's, like, those are the people I want to go hunting with. And I've had a lot of great hunting partners, you know, over the years who are willing to do that. And that's certainly my hunting partners now, you know. The same thing, you know, whether it's my kids or my friends or Drew or James or you or whoever's going to go out, you know, it's like everybody's going to.
Going to have a good time and a positive attitude about it. Yeah.
And just like, yeah, this is good, you know. And I was like, you guys feel like hiking way out there, or should we just kind of sit back here?
You guys feel like doing a 7 miler or like a 2 miler?
Yeah, like, well, where are we at here? You know what I mean? Do we want to do this? How much farther do we want to go? You know, you guys get hungry, whatever. Like, I think it's why a lot of guys specifically have a hard time taking their kids hunting, is because they're not aligned with, you know, what the goal is.
Yeah.
Like for me, I'm like, I take my kids hunting as much as I can. These days I'm more limited on that. But it's like every chance I can, I want to take them out. I don't really care if I get anything anymore. Look, man, I've killed a lot of shit. I've killed big game. I've killed small game. I've killed truckloads of freaking coyotes. So I just want to go out and have a good time. My most yesterday, for me, the most exciting thing that happened yesterday was how excited Drew was to have seen the coyote on stand, and how excited James was to have put it in a scope. That was the best part of the day for me yesterday. Yes, I enjoyed everything else. That was the best part. I didn't even see it. I've seen them hundreds of times.
Yeah.
You know, like, so for me anymore, if I take someone out, I want them to do the seeing. I want them to do the shooting. I've let plenty of animals. Now I let animals run right past me, you know, just so that they can get to this other person, because I want to give them an opportunity, right? And that's too kind of, to me, like the part of selecting a good hunting partner. If you have a hunting partner that their whole goal is to be successful themselves, so to speak, using the word successful in that manner, like, they have to do it. Dude, I'm just as happy if someone else kills an animal than if I do.
Yeah, when we were in that wash yesterday where I was, the one where we saw all the traffic, mm-hmm. you know, and Drew was on the ground.
Yeah.
I had a very limited view of like a far out area of that wash. But if they got, I like wasn't going to take a shot if they got past me and got close, I was mm-hmm. going to let Drew take it.
Yeah.
I told myself that from the beginning, mm-hmm. like, I want Drew to get something.
Yeah. If they break this barrier, there's no point in me taking that shot. Yeah,
exactly.
There's someone else there that probably has a better shot.
Yeah. And that's what I was mm-hmm. thinking is, and that, and she's super excited about mm-hmm. getting stuff too. So
it makes a big difference, man, when you go out with someone who really wants to do it and who has the same ideas you do about what they want to accomplish.
Yeah.
You know, selecting a hunting partner or a hunting group or a whatever may be one of the most important things in getting started in hunting. You know, that's a person who's going to potentially, especially if you're picking someone who's already like maybe more experienced in hunting than you, that's a person who's going to mentor you, right? They're going to teach you about the methods of learning this particular animal, or learning how to hunt this particular way or this particular time of year, whatever. Like, I'm so grateful forever. I am grateful to being able to grow up with my father, you know, who of course grew up in, who's been on the show and talked about it before, and grew up in big game guide hunting camps up in Jackson, Wyoming, which is our homeland. I mean, what an amazing opportunity to grow up with a guy who has just a wealth of knowledge about hunting. And more importantly, came at it from a family perspective. He's not a trophy hunter. Yeah. Yes, he's killed trophy animals. He's not a trophy hunter. You know, it was a family business. It was what they did for work. And so because of that, they learned to enjoy that work. And he passed that on to me of a element of enjoying. In fact, last night we were telling, my folks were over at the house. And we were telling them about our hunt yesterday, and we got to swapping hunting stories, and I was telling Drew some stories about, you know, growing up with my dad and watching him make some just incredible shots, those old man shots where they can't explain to you
how they did it. If I got him where I think I did, I took the head right off the top of that
coil. Exactly. That's the kind of story, right? That's one of the stories we were telling last night. But it's like, yeah, you know, it's just a little shit like that where we have these stories We didn't tell any stories about how big the animals were. Yeah. No story we told last night involved how large the animal was, how impressive they were. You know what I mean? We did. We killed some impressive animals. You know, but we never... That was not involved in the stories last night. They were the funny stories. They were stories about mistakes we made or stupid things we did or funny stuff that happened or, you know. And I think that's the part of getting involved in hunting is just wanting to get out there and have those kinds of experiences. You will eventually kill an animal. You know, that will eventually happen when you're out there. Some people do it right away, and some people it takes them a couple years to really settle in and whatever it may be. Like, it will eventually happen, and sometimes it's going to happen a lot, sometimes not as much. It depends on how much you get out there. I think one of the biggest things to remember is when I was in predator hunting clubs and used to really, you know, be into that world, we had a guy in our club who always used to tell the new guys, remember, you can't kill coyotes from the couch.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know? So you can sit around and you can plan and you can buy new gear and you can read all the books and you can practice your calls and you can do all that. But if you don't go out in the field, you will kill less coyotes than the dude who just bumbles his way out there and starts calling coyotes. He's probably going to call and kill more coyotes than you are because he's out there all the time. And remember when you're getting involved in hunting that when you look at photos of people's hunting experiences and they have this big buck, this huge bull, or this beautiful ram from Kazakhstan, or they have this truckload of coyotes or whatever, and you're like, oh my gosh, that didn't come from no hard work and no failure. Mm-mm. There was a lot of failure that went into that. There were plenty of times they went out and didn't get anything. There were plenty of times they went out and made mistakes. They probably might have even missed that animal, or maybe a better one, or maybe a bigger one. You know, and they had to track it down again to get another shot, or they had to find something else. There were times that they went out and made serious mistakes that cost them the entire freaking hunt. You know, all those people who have posted up all those photos. Remember, social media is a place where you post your successes, not your failures. It's a
highlight reel, bro.
It's a highlight reel. You know, there's no one up there going, oh, dude, today I freaking missed the biggest buck in my life.
Today.
Yeah, no one's doing that, right? So remember, when you're seeing these photos, man, people aren't just getting that. It's a lot of money and energy and effort and equipment, and it went into that. You know, so tell me some more about things that you learned, James, from a new hunter perspective.
One thing we kind of touched on, but take every shot that's clear and don't be afraid to shoot. And if you can get a second or third shot on something, take it. And yeah, like I said, that coyote yesterday, if he had gone a different way, you bet your ass I would have taken another shot at him. So.
Well, one thing I told you yesterday was my philosophy is always it's better to shoot and miss than not shoot and wonder.
Yeah.
You know, always rather take the shot than not take the shot.
And if I hadn't taken that shot yesterday, I'd be kicking myself today going, man, what could have happened? You know what I mean?
What if I would have hit?
Yeah, exactly.
Or now you can just kick yourself for missing.
At least I know I tried.
But at least you pressed the trigger.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And you were however close you were closer than if you wouldn't have taken the shot.
100%. Yeah. And that's how I felt about it. And like I said, just taking that shot pumped me up for the rest of the day to keep going out there and keep doing it. And that was a good way to start the morning, I thought.
Now, from a military perspective, because you spent a pretty good amount of time in the military, you got a couple deployments under your belt, you went through some cool schools and worked with some great units and all that. So you learned some tactics over the time. One of the things I always like about hunting and teaching veterans how to hunt is that there's applicable military tactics to hunting in general. And it's one thing that I always find really fun, and it was one of the most appealing things to me about predator hunting was I'm like, this is basically ambush counter ambush that we're doing mm-hmm. here. You know, when I'm setting up multiple shooters, I'm setting up ambush formations. I mean, this is pretty phenomenal. I'm trying to draw someone into an ambush and then effectively ambush them, you know? What were some of the lessons from your military experience that you think you could apply, either applied yesterday or could apply to future hunts?
What we did apply was that L-shaped ambush mm-hmm. that we did initially. I think that was great. And that's just, you know, that's a simple ambush anybody could do. Mm-hmm. Like, you can Google military ambushes. It's going to be one of the first five up there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like you said yesterday, the wedge, we could apply that to just getting them into a fatal funnel, mm-hmm. so to speak. We could apply that in future hunts, I think. And it's not difficult to do if you know how to look at it from an aerial perspective and where to set people. So I think those definitely come up, and that you have to have just a little bit of knowledge about that in order to do something successfully and get into position successfully. So that was really good.
Did you realize that we were applying things like, you know, hasty overland travel and listening stops?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like haul ass to a point where now we need to stop, look, listen, see what's going on, collect. Hey guys, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. Okay. Now it's time to sneakily move into a position.
Yeah.
Right. Under cover of, you know, using terrain features to mask our movement. We're essentially doing what they do, what the predators do.
Yeah.
You know, in this case. And what the prey would do, too, if we were hunting prey.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, we wanted to take some more difficult routes to get to places. So, I mean, it was, they don't want to see us coming into the easy areas because that'll scare them off, you know. They know what to look for just like we do. Mm-hmm. I think that was very important. And another important thing, it's probably lastly, the thing I got is, if you're going to do this stuff and you want to go hike out, like you said, 2 to 7 miles, and you want to, you know, at some point you're going to have to take a pack with some water, or maybe a snack with you, you know, you got to think about your rifle. You got to think about temperature and everything else. You've got to be in a physical condition where you can accomplish all that stuff. And that's something I don't think anybody would think of before a hunt, as like you said, like me having no experience, I didn't know what, you know, how long we were going to sit in a specific area for a specific time. You know, I didn't know we'd be moving that much. And thank God, like, I loved it, but thank God I was in the condition to do it. Because I can only imagine, like, if a brand new hunter was like, I'm going to go out and do this with my, you know, with a mentor, and they weren't in the physical condition to do it, and they would suck ass the whole day, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, we climbed down in some rougher canyons. We, you know, had to move over some rough terrain, loose terrain, sand, yeah, rocks, washes. You see Arizona deserts and high deserts. It's crazy rough country.
Yeah. And it's every like I said, every hide we stopped at was different. Mm. So that you got to just be prepared for that stuff.
Physical conditioning is important because it gets us back to the place that we want to go. And speaking of going to different places, one of the listener, Brent, actually left a comment. When hunting, do not forget your medical kit and let someone know where you're going and how long you'll be gone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the first things I always do. Like, Drew is typically my trusted other. Well, she's with us. So now I sent the information to my parents who are, you know, down here for the winter. So it's like, hey, here's where we're going. Here's what we're going to be doing. Here's what time we expect to be back. You know, if I go in someone else's vehicle, then I'm going to send them vehicle information. They already have my vehicle information, but it's like, I'm going to send them vehicle information. Hey, here's the vehicle. I mean, here's the license plate. I mean, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because I want people to know where I am, what I'm doing, you know, hey, we're going to be up along the 87. If we grossly diverged away from that, then I would have updated them. But basically, we stayed right along the 87 the whole time. so it's like letting someone know where you're going. And yeah, personal med kits, which for us, I mean, it's like Drew had her kit, you had yours, I had mine. We're all pretty dialed in on that shit. But it's like, yeah, don't forget. And don't forget other types of supplies like water and snacks and, you know, extra ammo and the other kind of stuff that you're going to need. Don't overload yourself. Like, you saw how light we travel.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time we're going to a stand. If I know it's going to be within a half a mile, I pretty much take my med kit, my phone, whatever I need to hunt, like a call, my decoy, whatever, and my rifle.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, that little tan bag has like a med kit and some snacks and stuff like in it, but it's, there's not a lot of stuff in there, you know, because I don't want to, you don't want to overweigh yourself to the point where you're just like, oh my God, I got to carry all this shit out there. It's going to prevent you from wanting to go very far.
And even if we had gone out, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 miles, all we would have needed was water in addition to everything else you had. You know what I mean? I think that other than that, we would have been covered.
So that's an important thing to think about as well, is making sure you let other people know where you are. If you have a hard time finding your vehicle, you know, if you're prone to getting lost and things like that, like, I mean, don't forget to mark your vehicle before you leave it. You know, you get into the cedars, freaking cedars all look the same, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're on the flat desert, terrain features are very specific, it's relatively easy to find your way back. You start getting in the cedars, dude, they're all the same height, they all look the freaking same. You're like, is this the same wash we came through? And it's like, if you're not going to literally track your own tracks back, it's really easy to get turned around. I mean, even coming back on the last stand we were on, we were in the Cedars, and I started chasing this fucking jackrabbit. And the next thing you know, we're like 100 yards off the path of where we're supposed to be because I'm like, oh, shit. And Drew's like, ah, no problem. I got the truck tagged on my phone. So she pulls it up. Hey, guys, we need to head this way. And it's like, oh, yeah. We kind of knew that was generally the direction we needed to go. But she was able just because with, hey, thanks, technology. She was able to go, yeah, just literally walk back here. Yeah. Instead of taking us 20 minutes, it took us 10.
Well, you can take a general direction sometimes and still be way off.
Oh yeah, man. If you're only off by a couple degrees, I mean, we all learned that in Land. You know, you only have to be off by a couple degrees and a couple degrees over an extended distance, and now you're like, where the hell are we?
You're nowhere near where you're supposed to be. Crap.
So that kind of stuff happens, you know. So again, if you have a hard time doing that, make sure you mark it. You know, it's technology now, man. Mark it on your freaking phone. Mark it on your GPS. Whatever you got to do, make sure you park in an open area. If you know you have a hard time getting back to your vehicle, make sure you always park your vehicle in a very open space. Don't park next to trees. Don't park next to bushes. Don't park in a wash. Don't park someplace that's going to be hard to see. So all those things are important, just kind of from, you know, some emergency prep stuff as well. One of our listeners says, don't forget your mags. Yeah, don't forget your ammo. More than once, I've gone onto stands with people for hunting and people like, shit. I forgot my ammo in the truck, which actually kind of brings up a point for new hunters, like loaded or unloaded. Now, before you hunted with me yesterday and hunted with Drew and I yesterday, what did you think about the whole, yes, mag, should you leave a mag in, take the mag out, round in, round out? What was your kind of thought going into that?
Oh, loaded with a round in.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that's totally what we did.
Because part of this, I felt like it was just like, it's just like going on a patrol. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't do that on a patrol. Why would I do it on a hunt? Because also, what are you going to do? Sit down in a hide and slam your magazine in right as you're sitting down and getting embedded in there? You're going to scare off anything that's close.
So we're loaded round in on the way to stand, loaded round in on the way back to stand. We are loaded round in with the guns in the truck. Now, pay attention here, folks. Laws are important. You can't do that in every state.
True.
Colorado, for example, I hunt in Colorado. You cannot have any ammunition in the gun while the vehicle's in transportation at all. If it's for hunting purposes like rifles, stuff like that. Concealed carry pistols, totally different thing. But
yeah.
When you're talking about rolling around with hunting guns, you cannot have a loaded hunting firearm while you are driving down the road. In a place like Arizona, you can. It doesn't matter. You can have a fucking 60-round drum in there. They don't give a shit. So make sure that you're following your state and local laws, right? So make sure you understand those. But for us, when we put them in, we put them in a very specific way. We put them in the back of the vehicle. No one really has access to them. No one's fumbling around with them. Safeties are on. We double check that before we shut the door. They're pointed
sideways.
That way the muzzles aren't pointed straight to all of us sitting in the vehicle. So they're pointed sideways. God forbid something happens. Oh, yeah. We're going to shoot a bullet through a freaking rear quarter panel, not someone's back.
Fucking kidney.
So that's something to think about, too, is how are we going to handle firearms? A lot of times, like when I'm dealing with back of the truck, which we were using an SUV instead of a truck, so it's a little different. We had a back space. But in the truck, because we're putting them in the back seat, I'll always be like, all right, I'm going in. You step back away from your door so that I can put my muzzle in on the seat. Okay, I'm in. Slam the door. Step away. Now then, person on the other side of the truck steps up to the door. Puts their gun. Because basically their muzzle's gonna be pointing towards me and my muzzle's gonna be pointing towards them if we were to try to do it at the same time.
Yeah.
So now if something goes wrong, the bolt flies to the door and you go, well, shit, that sucked. But you don't get freaking shot.
Yeah.
So how we're gonna handle guns is important.
We had a student that something like that happened to? Loading a rifle in?
One of my friends, an old hunting partner of mine actually, and we told the story on the show.
Yeah.
Just a couple months ago. Yeah, we were talking about the firearm safety thing. And yes, damn near shot his buddy with a freaking 6.5 that basically contact distance.
Yeah, that's right.
So what? Any other lessons, any other parting things, James?
That was really all I had. But, I mean, I guess the biggest takeaway is if you don't get anything, don't get upset. Don't beat yourself up. You're there to have a good time. And I think that's exactly what we did yesterday. It was a great learning experience. I had a great time. If we could have stayed out there longer, I would have stayed out there longer, so other than that, yeah, it was just a good experience overall.
I would totally agree with that and add the only way to get started in hunting is to get out and do it. Learn by trial and error if you don't have someone to teach you. Oftentimes people will contact me, well, I don't know where to go. I don't know where to start. Start with the local Game and Fish, Fish and Wildlife Service, whatever. See if they have a hunter education program. Start there. And at least teach you the laws and things like that. They don't really teach you how to hunt, but they will teach you the laws. Then start finding groups in your area that know about that stuff. You want to hunt quail? Look at Quail Unlimited in your area. You want to hunt elk? Go to the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. You know, you want to hunt predators? Go look at a predator club in your state. There's probably one there. You look for a group that wants to do what you do and go there and be like, I'm a rook and I want some help. And guaranteed, there is somebody that wants to teach us. Some old retired guy who's got nothing better to do with his time than hang out with you and teach you how to hunt because he's excited about it. Take advantage of those opportunities. Get out and hunt. You can't kill cows from the couch or deer or elk or ducks or whatever your thing is, right? So get out there and get to it. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information through email info@trainingaz.com. We're happy to come out and teach whatever programs you want us to teach there in your area. And it's easy to host us, and you get to train for free. It's worth it. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Make sure to look at the other shows on the network. A lot of great stuff coming up from them. Next week, we're going to be talking about the four D's of structural defense, how to secure and defend a structure. Mostly has to do with how to make your structure the kind of place that nobody wants to fuck with.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about the four D's of structural defense next week. Until then, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.